This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Glad you could join me this week because we have a terrific episode lined up for you. Sergio Mora, the former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster, good friend of the podcast. He is back. We are both down in Miami for the DAZN card, headlined by Demetrius Andrade's middleweight title defense. And Sergio and I cover all the topics in boxing right now, from Andrade's inability to get a big fight, what's going on there, why Jermall Charlo won't take him on. We talk about Tevin Farmer versus Jojo Diaz, which is one of the big fights of this upcoming weekend, and a whole bunch of other topics I hit on with Sergio Mora. A little bit later on, Demetrius Andrade himself sits down with me, and I ask him directly, what is going on? Why can't you get a significant fight despite the fact that you have a title and a lot of money behind you? We specifically get into the Charlo stuff and why that fight hasn't materialized despite the fact that everybody thinks that fight is the best for both of them. So stick around for all that on a terrific SI Boxing Pod. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free, it takes seconds, and it is the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to my conversation with Sergio Mora. All right, Sergio Mora is back, former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster, worst morning person I've ever been across. You know, grown to know. What is the matter with you? Like,
I need 11 hours.
Why?
I need 11 hours sleep. You didn't let me get my sleep.
Go to bed earlier.
I'm with you. I can't. I'm not functioning
so
well right now.
Last night was my fault.
Yes, it was. And tonight is going to be your fault, too.
You went to a basketball game and then to a
which
bar.
Which you didn't provide tickets for. How can you be a Sports Illustrated senior writer and can't get Boston Celtics tickets? I had to go on StubHub and get them for my colleagues. Like, you can never do the right thing, ever.
Do you get 11 hours? Like, does your wife even like you in the morning? Like, does it, like, how much sleep do you get on an average day?
Let's not bring up the wives.
Oh, okay. Let's not do that. All right. We do have a lot to get into today. Down here in Miami for the DAZN show, headlined by Demetrius Andrade. And I want to talk about Andrade first, Sergio. He's on his fourth fight of this DAZN deal. He has a title, recognized title, around his waist. He's got a big checkbook behind him, but he can't get a significant fight. He's fighting Luke Keeler this weekend. Luke Keeler earned this shot by beating Luis Arias. That was a good win for him, but Andrade's going to come into this fight as a massive favorite. Why can't Demetrius Andrade get a big fight?
He has a southpaw curse. I mean, he's too good for his own good. He has that Olympic pedigree, and he's tall, he's dark and handsome, like he says. He does all the right things. He fights at a distance. He doesn't fight out of character. He's hard to hit. He hits hard enough to get respect. He has that curse that every southpaw had. If you look at guys like Winky Wright, you know, Paul Williams, even go back to Marvin Hagler, they're avoided for a reason. And what do they all have in common? They're southpaws. Guillermo Rigondeaux, southpaw, you know, Olympic pedigree. So it's just that southpaw curse that if you can avoid a southpaw, especially one that fights like a southpaw and maintains that discipline, you just avoid them at all costs. And that's exactly why they're avoiding Andrade.
Yeah, but I get all that. And I get that fighters like, say, Boots Ennis, who won a couple of weeks ago on Showtime. I get why he's avoided at this point. He doesn't bring a lot of reward to the risk. Virgil Ortiz, another guy, doesn't bring a lot of reward to the risk. All the things you're talking about are true, but don't they go out the window when you have a reward at the end of it? Like, you fight Demetrius Andrade, and you are going to get a chance to fight for a middleweight title, and you're going to get paid a whole lot of money. You know, millions of dollars. Doesn't all that stuff become inconsequential when you have the opportunity to make a ton of money and fight for a title?
Money changes things. If you're at the end of your career, or if you're not used to making that kind of money. But Andrade is making a life-changing money, you know, with DAZN.
I'm not talking about Andrade, though. I'm talking about the guys that won't fight. Like, the guys that won't fight Andrade.
Well, they're making huge money. Canelo and Golovkin, they're making big money, and they need to extend their career as long as possible. So, you know, they already have their contracts. You know, if they can avoid Demetrius Andrade, they're going to
do it.
It doesn't
fine.
matter.
Then let's go to the meat of all this. Forget, I get why Canelo doesn't fight him. Canelo has other business this year, and Andre doesn't really do a lot for Canelo. He's going to make significant money anyway, regardless of what happens. Golovkin, we all know the score. Golovkin needs to get to Canelo, and Demetrius Andrade represents an extremely tough fight before that. The guy that I don't understand at all is Jermall Charlo. I do not get what Jermall Charlo is doing right now, because last year he fought two fights against Brandon Adams and Dennis Hogan that basically nobody watched. Like, it's the equivalent of nobody watched them with the ratings that he got. He has no obvious fight coming up with, you know, maybe Chris Eubank in a fight that, you know, I don't think anybody outside of the Charlo and Eubank family cares about. And then maybe he can get Derevyanchenko down the line. Why doesn't Jermall Charlo jump at the chance to fight Demetrius Andrade?
For the same exact reason, but this one has politics behind it with the promotional sides, with PBC and DAZN. But they need to fight. Those two need to fight. They're made for each other, because Charlo's not a superstar either. He's not making that superstar Golovkin Canelo money. He's not, and neither is Andrade. So I think they need each other, and they're the right style matchup also, because Charlo, he fights southpaws pretty well, and he has a hard enough punch where he can end it with, or he can get the respect with one punch, because you're gonna need power to actually beat a guy like Andrade, and Charlo has that. He has the athleticism, he has the speed, and he has that chip on his shoulder too. He brings all that to the table.
Okay, no, so look,
Charlo needs to step up.
I agree with you. So you think Charlo's ducking Andrade?
Yes, everybody is ducking Andrade. Andrade is the boogeyman of the 160-pound division. The only way Andrade's gonna get a big fight is if he moves up to 168.
Okay, well, I don't want to
see that. Or fight Daniel Jacob, his friend. But other than that, they're going to avoid him.
I'm just going to
Avoid him at all costs.
I'm at this point. I'm ordering Charlo versus Andrade T-shirts at some point. There's just not, like, there is no reason for those two guys not to fight each other. Because Andrade, if he wins this fight against Keeler, and it's not Charlo, it's probably going to be somebody like Liam Williams in a who cares type of fight there. Charlo fights Chris Eubank. The other guy that's annoying me is Derevyanchenko. Like, Derevyanchenko's out there. You know, you talk to Lou DiBella, he's looking for an opponent for Derevyanchenko. Nobody will fight Derevyanchenko. Well, Andrade's sitting there being like, I'll fight Derevyanchenko. He can have a shot at my title in $3 million as well. Yeah. Like, I hate saying fighters like duck, because I think there's always reasons not to fight, but not fighting Demetrius Andrade at this point is flat out ducking. It's just avoiding him at all costs.
Is there another word for ducking? Is there a euphemism for ducking? Is there something else?
Euphemism is probably the wrong word.
Okay, but is there something else other than ducking? Because ducking's really a harsh word.
It is a harsh word.
We're
that's
not
why
ducking.
I asked you.
Just like
you,
quitting is
quitting's a harsh word, too.
That's a harsh word, too.
But
so
do you,
we
I asked
retired.
You
so what's
I
another word for ducking?
I don't know. I don't want to have a softer word. I asked you if Charlo was ducking Andrade. You said yes.
No, it's another word. It's not ducking. You whatever said, that other word is, that's what it is. It's not ducking.
We can rewind the tape. You said yes that he
avoiding.
Was...
Avoiding. I said avoiding. I don't think I said
all right,
ducking.
Fine. I asked if he was ducking Andrade.
Circumventing.
That's not... It's just like,
is that the word?
It's a word, but that's just
whatever it is. Look, man, we want to avoid southpaws at all costs. All right. That's it. Well, we don't want to fight them, especially when they fight like southpaws. They have the amateur pedigree. They're dangerous and they're confident. You stay away as long as possible. Look at what Canelo did with Erislandi Lara. He didn't fight him. He pushed him aside for as long as possible until the public demanded it. And then when the public did demand it, what did Lara do? He almost beat him. And some people thought that he did deserve
the
decision.
I mean, you're kind of reinventing history there. I don't think the public was demanding Lara versus Canelo. Canelo was one that said, Lara's viewed as the top guy at 154. I want to fight him. Golden Boy didn't want him to fight him. Golden Boy was pushing against that hard, because it didn't bring a lot to the table. So...
I think it got made because the public was saying, what about Lara?
It got made because Canelo got it made. Canelo was
the hardcore purists, the boxing purists, the people in the game, they were bringing that up. With Andrade, he keeps being avoided, even by the writers. You're the only one that sticks up for Andrade, to tell the truth.
I really am. I'm the only one beating the drum for this ridiculous
fight.
So am
I, by the way, but I'm not a senior writer at a magazine.
You know who ducked Andrade? You. You ducked Andrade.
Absolutely. And
yes, you did.
I'll duck him. I don't circumvent him. I ducked him purposely.
Absolutely ducked Andrade. That's true. One of the problems with putting Andrade on these pound-for-pound lists is because he doesn't have a depth of top opponents that he beats. I mean, there are a lot of people out there, and I've talked to Sean Porter about this. I've talked to Terrence Crawford about this. I've talked to BOMAC, Terrence Crawford's trainer, about this. All these guys put Andrade at or near the top of the pound-for-pound list, but it's hard to put him there because...
When you haven't beaten anyone that's
beaten
on the list.
Yet.
I agree. No, you can't be on the list unless you beat someone on the list.
Yeah.
In order to be the man, you got to beat the man. And look, with all due respect, I'm praising Demetrius Andrade just like everyone you just mentioned. But when you're fighting guys like Walter Kontandanko and Artur Akhovov and these type of fighters, and Maciej Sulecki, he's just beating the people they put in front of him.
Right.
But that's not enough. You know, so you need someone with a resume, someone with a background, someone that's like, oh, okay, let's see what he does against this guy. You know, and that's when you actually turn heads, everyone's heads, even the haters.
A legitimate criticism, though, of Andre is that he doesn't go for knockouts enough. I mean, look, I thought against Khouten Dakwa, he went for the knockout, just wasn't there. The guy just kept, like, rising from the canvas four times in that fight. But if you look at the Selecki fight, that was tough because he had Selecki hurt in the first round. And then you heard his father, his trainer, in the corner between the first and second round saying, that's not our fight. Like that, you were sitting there with
me. I love
that.
Like, I loved hearing that.
You love that.
I loved hearing that because when you go out of character, which he was doing, going for the knockout, that's when you get knocked out. And then guess what? Your record becomes blemished. You lose your title all because you wanted to chase something that's not you. Don't do that, man. Get the win. Get your head out of your ass. Get the win. Let's move on.
What are you talking about? Like you get... You can get a win, but when does winning by decision move the needle at all? When does beating Maciek Selecki for Andre do anything for his career? In fact, I think he lost momentum because of that. He had this guy hurt in the first round. That guy couldn't see left hands coming. He was buckled. You go out in the second round with the same attitude, maybe you get a stoppage, and then you have some momentum to get a Canelo fight or a Golovkin fight or a Charlo fight down the road.
You are a critic, and I respect your opinion. I am a boxer, respect mine. He's pitching shutouts. You know how difficult it is to win every single round, 36 minutes of a fight, and he does it. He pitches shutouts. He doesn't let you hit him, and he almost gets you out. He knocks down opponents. He knocked down Khouten Dakwa. He knocked down Selecki. He can't take him out. It's not that he doesn't have power. It's just not in his character.
My problem was he didn't try after that first round. Maybe if you go for it in the second round, and Selecki hits you with a couple of shots. Say, all right, you know, I'm going to back up and fight more of a defensive
It just
style.
Takes one shot, man.
Okay,
it takes one shot. And the fine. Next thing you know, trying to please Chris Mannix just ruined his
it's
career.
It's not me.
Not what? Ruined his career. He gets a blemish on his career.
It's not me.
Just by trying to please you.
Okay, it's not me. He didn't get a big fight. He fought that fight in June and fought nobody else the rest of the year. Was not even mentioned in the conversation with Canelo or Golovkin. Does not have a Charlo fight. So clearly, it's not just me saying, you know, that really didn't do much for him. He knocks him out. I think that does a lot for him. He knocks Luke Keeler out. Would you admit that knocking out Luke Keeler does a lot more for...
I think he's going to stop Luke
okay,
Keeler.
Okay, but would you... Like, if he beats Luke Keeler in a 12-round decision, are you going to be like, good job? Like, if he goes 121 away...
If it's a shutout, yes.
Oh, my God. This is what...
No, he's going to stop... He needs to stop Keeler. I agree with you. He's going to have to stop a fighter like Luke Keeler. One, because Keeler's been stopped before. And he's been stopped by who? Tom Duran or something like that?
Yeah.
So he's been stopped before, one. And two, he's not on his level. So this is let's get it clear. It's a stay busy fight for Demetrius Andre. They threw him a bone. This is a stay busy fight strictly for that. And he needs to get that impressive win. So yes, for this one, he needs a knockout.
He signed a 4-fight extension with Matchroom. Those need to be big fights coming up. And that Charlo fight should be front and center for both those guys. All right, let me talk to you about Conor McGregor. And the amount of boxers out there now chasing Conor McGregor. McGregor, you know, came back in UFC 246, won in spectacular style, reestablished himself as a top UFC guy. And in the immediate aftermath, you had Floyd Mayweather on social media teasing a rematch against Conor McGregor. For weeks before, you had Manny Pacquiao and his representative saying, I want to fight Conor McGregor. You have Bud Crawford and Top Rank saying, we'll not only fight Conor McGregor in boxing, we'll move Bud over to the MMA, to the UFC, and fight a UFC match against Crawford. What do you make of all these huge boxing stars fighting or looking to fight UFC's biggest star?
They're chasing the money. They're chasing the easy money because beating Conor McGregor in a boxing fight, it's easy money. I think any top 10 contender can beat Conor McGregor. Have you seen him warm up with that arm wing thing? Can you imagine punching? He falls off balance. He can't go the distance. He got tired halfway through the fight with Mayweather. He doesn't have the legs to box 36 minutes. You're not on your toes in the UFC. You're wrestling. You could take breaks. It's just apples and oranges, two different sports. That's why every boxer, including myself, throw my name in the mix. I'm salivating to fight that man. I mean, he's not a boxer. Stay over there. But he's popular. He's a caricature. He's like an Irish Mayweather. You know, everyone wants to see him get his ass kicked. But it's not going to happen because he's a really good MMA fighter. But he's not a good boxer. So, yes, everybody wants to fight him for the money, the easy money.
So is there any boxing match that you'd want to see Conor McGregor in?
Okay. No, zero.
I don't disagree. I mean, I think, especially when it's on pay-per-view, it's just an unbelievable money grab. Like, I didn't go to Mayweather-McGregor the first one because why would I waste a, weekend night in August to go watch a fight? I know how it's going to end. Like, that doesn't do anything for me. Pacquiao might even end more violently for McGregor because about Pacquiao fights. The one thing I would say with, and I don't necessarily want to see this, but if they made like a two fight thing with Crawford, okay, because you look down the pipe, there's nothing for Crawford in 2020. Top Rank has major problems making any kind of a fight of any kind of significance for Crawford.
He's like, another one in the mix. And guess what does he have in common with every with Andre? Southpaw, amateur pedigree.
Well, yeah, his problem though is more politics than anything else, and he won't fight Sean Porter. That's a big problem too. But if he can't, I don't care if it's like if he can't get a fight against one of the top guys or even a top 10 guy at welterweight, I can see Crawford going and fighting a two fight thing with McGregor and getting something out of it. Because Crawford's not as big a star as Pacquiao and Mayweather. You fight Conor McGregor, and if
Conor McGregor would never fight Crawford, ever. Are you kidding me?
Enough for money.
No, like, you're nuts. No, that's another one. Money doesn't solve everything. Well, if kinda, Crawford, it kind of does.
Yeah, sure it does. If Crawford goes over to UFC, people would watch.
No, man. Look, no. That's the wrong style matchup for
of course
for,
it's the wrong.
For and anybody.
And some of the stupid
you
commentary.
Fight someone, if you're Conor McGregor, you fight someone that people know, but that's very limited. Not athletic, not fast, not powerful, not a pound-for-pound guy like
Wait,
Crawford.
Wait, you think McGregor should be nervous about fighting Crawford in MMA?
In any sense of the word.
What are you talking about?
Oh, man, stay away from Crawford. Don't mention
him. In MMA?
Even somehow, that man would do something great in MMA.
No, he wouldn't. Like, well, he's that great. Why? Because he wrestled in middle school? Like, I played, a musical instrument in middle school. It doesn't mean I can play at the Boston Pops.
When I met Terrence Crawford at Staples Center, I went up to him. I don't go up to many boxers, but I went up to him and I said, hey, man, I just got to say, it's amazing to see you fight, man. Watching you fight is like watching like a black Bruce Lee. And he started laughing. I go, man, it's amazing what you do from southpaw to orthodox. I go, it just comes natural. I go, I love watching you fight. And he grinned, he smiled, he goes, I appreciate it. He's that special. So I mentioned the Bruce Lee thing because if he goes into MMA, somehow he can kick. If you practice 2-3 months in kicking, that man will probably kick and do something. I'm telling you.
You practice 2-3 months of kicking and you can become a...
He's that good. He's that athletic. I mean, look at Bruce Lee. He used to study Muhammad Ali tapes. He used to do the dancing.
He was an actor.
Yeah. A very good one.
I don't know what that has to do with anything. I sat cage side. The only MMA fight I've ever been at was when James Toney went over to the MMA. And what did he fight? Randy Couture at that point, like 10, 15 years ago. And that was an embarrassment.
It is.
James Toney got in there.
And there was another
one. Went for his legs.
And there's another one. There's two boxers that went into the MMA. I think it was...
None of it went well.
No,
it
never goes well.
Heather Hardy
is a boxer. And they're usually fighters that are past their prime with no legs. If you're going to go into the MMA, you better have a spring in your step. Because when they try to get your legs...
But it doesn't matter. It's a sport that Crawford couldn't learn in a matter of months. There's no way he could learn that in a matter of months.
I just said he can learn how to kick. I didn't say he could learn how to jiu-jitsu.
You just said that McGregor should stay away from him.
Yeah, he should.
I'm literally getting a headache listening to you talk in circles here.
You should try being me for once. Yes, that's exactly what it's like. But look, I'm telling you right now, McGregor should stay away from Crawford. Crawford should stay get the easy money. Yes.
All right. Well, I think it's... It would build Crawford's profile, I think, if he fought McGregor. And I think he'd win in boxing and lose badly in MMA. But his profile would build maybe in 2021.
It's not going to happen, Chris.
It's probably not going to happen either. No. Either. Real quick on McGregor. UFC does a great job of building stars, not from scratch, but, when one star fades, the next one comes in. You had, Ronda Rousey, huge star in UFC. When she, separated from them, you had McGregor come up. They just had two guys with, double-digit losses or something on their resume, and Nate Diaz and Madvisal fight for the baddest motherfucker belt, whatever that was.
Mofo.
Yeah, Mofo. They just they've done a great job of building stars. Why is boxing have such a problem at that? And look, people would say with UFC,
it's not a problem. See, you're already rubbing me the wrong way by saying it's a problem. It's not a problem. It's a different demographic. You're hitting a different demographic. In the UFC, you're hitting that wrestling WWF, WWE demographic. What is it? It's young and white. And in boxing, it's Latino populated with the pay-per-view. It's older, and it's older and white. So it's just a different demographic. You're trying to pull that crowd, but no. I mean, who's buying pay-per-view? It's going to be the young kids that want to watch this. And Conor McGregor is very popular, and he took a page out of Mayweather's book. He's doing something that most MMA fighters don't do. And he carries himself with swag, and he does what Mayweather does, but for a WWF MMA audience.
Well, there's a simple answer, though, that is easily often repeated, is that in the UFC, the best fight the best consistently. Like, the top guys fight all the time, whereas in boxing, we spend more time talking about guys fighting.
That's because they're all under one umbrella.
Right.
They're all under the UFC umbrella.
Would you agree that's the biggest problem?
Like yeah,
that,
politics.
In building stars. Like, you know, Fury's fighting Wilder, but one of the reasons I think that's not going to do as well as they hope it does on pay-per-view is because neither one of those guys has fought a lot of top competition prior to that. So, you know, middle America doesn't really know who those guys are. You know, the right. coast you might, the hardcore boxing right. fans you sure do, but that's a major problem. The depth of opponents that top boxers don't have is a problem.
I agree with you. Yeah. It happens occasionally.
All right, good fight this weekend. The best fight, I think, on the card this weekend. You have a different opinion, but I think that Tevin Farmer, Jojo Diaz, featherweight title fight, Tevin Farmer putting his 130-pound title on the line against Diaz. A lot of back and forth between these two. It's kind of been building up for the last 6 months to a year with their social medias. Farmer has had kind of an Andrade-type run since he signed with DAZN. He won a title. He stayed busy, but he hasn't had a marquee win. Jojo Diaz, he lost his toughest fight to date against Gary Russell. Now he's moving up to 130 pounds to try to take on Tevin Farmer. Let's start with who this fight is most important for. Like, who needs a win in this fight?
Jojo Diaz.
Okay.
Why? Hands down, because he was supposed to be the next big thing for Golden Boy out of the Olympics. And he came up short with Gary Russell, another Olympian. No shame there. But then the Rojas fight, I believe it was, where he didn't make weight. That's a sign of you're not respecting the sport and discipline. And once you start losing titles, or he wasn't even a champion, but once you start missing weight for a championship fight or losing your belt on the scales, that's when your character comes into play. So Jojo needs this win, not only for his future, his reputation, but even if he wants to become anything in this sport, because he has the goods, he has the backing, he has a promotion, but he just hasn't had that big win. He needs that against Tevin Farmer. I don't think it's going to be very difficult for him to get it, because Farmer's the goods for once, and he's another southpaw that people avoid, but he's active. So activity, what is it? His fifth defense in a little bit more than a year. That's incredible for a champion. So he's not only really gifted, he's athletic, he's experienced, he's smart, he's confident, he's lethal in the southpaw stance, but he's active, he's dangerous. It's going to be very difficult for Diaz to beat a Farmer in an exciting fashion. If he beats him, it's going to be a 12. They're both 12 round distance fighters, so expect it to go the distance. But I just don't see him outboxing Farmer. And if he can do it, of course, he gets the victory. It's going to be very difficult.
Though. No, I agree with all that. I think it is important for Diaz to win. I think Farmer, though, not only needs to win, but it's got to be entertaining with his win. I mean,
and it's not going to happen. Entertaining. I hate to say that because we're calling the fight, but neither of these fighters have proved in their career that they can be entertaining. They are very good.
Diaz brings a fight. Like, that's why I think it could be. I think it could be kind of like what John O'Carroll was against Tevin Farmer.
And we were giving. Well, I was at least. I was giving John O'Carroll a lot of credit in that fight because I like. That's how you beat a southpaw. That's how you beat Farmer. And then a lot of people, you know, gave me heat, including Tim Farmer, saying that, you know, I didn't give him enough credit. No, man. Carroll broke records of the punches he threw. That's what you need to do against a fighter like Tevin Farmer or against an Andrade. You need to smother them. You need to suffocate them with punches. And if you're not going to get credit from the judges for doing that, then you're not going to win against these guys. And Jojo Diaz, he's not a smothering puncher like that. He's a boxer puncher. He has good pop. He has good experience. If he can get combinations together, then he can beat you. Farmer's not going to stand in front of him for him to get his punches off.
No, he won't, but if Farmer wins in the same way he beat Francois in the last fight, he's going to have a hard time getting another one. Like, because I don't think that, you know, DAZN is going to want to, you know, keep putting on these types of Tevin Farmer fights, despite the fact that he has a title. I have a hard time seeing, you know, Top Rank put Jamel Herring in with him, Bert Schelt in with him, any of the 126 guys they have moving up. He's tried to get a Tank Davis fight. Maybe that's something. But if he goes out there and kind of just out executes Jojo Diaz and makes it, you know, just boring.
The southpaw curse, man.
But he's
happening.
He's going to have a. Do you agree he'd have a hard time getting fights in the future if he doesn't fight and win entertainingly?
Yes. He doesn't need a knockout. I think Andrade is gonna needs one and is gonna get one.
I don't think Tevin needs a knockout. But he's got to stay.
I think Tevin Farmer needs to fight like he did against John O'Carroll.
Yeah.
If he
fights like Carroll, I think there's upside to him. If he fights like Francois, it's just like, what are we doing here? Like, we don't need another 130-pound title holder. Is not worth the kind of money that's being invested in Tevin Farmer. He's got to he's got to come out big. I'm fascinated with that fight, though, because it is a significant fight between two guys near or at the top of their respective divisions. And I think the winner in the rankings certainly will take a big step forward.
Everyone's looking forward to this fight, including, yeah. Look, whether you're a boxing aficionado or not, you're looking forward to these two guys because they're in their prime. You got an Olympian, you got a fighter in Farmer who's an active champion, and not that many people know. It's just the right time for them to fight.
Yeah, no question. You are a bigger fan, though, of the opening bout on the main card. Roman Akhmadaliev, 122 pounds, right?
Yeah, 122
pound title fight. It's interesting because this is the kind of fight. Roman is the champion. He is a unified title holder coming off one of the best fights of the year against TJ Dahany. And he's coming in, I think, Sergio, as an underdog in some of these odds against a guy that only has a very limited resume. What do you make of that?
I would put him as an underdog. The only reason I think Roman is taking this fight is, one, because he thinks he can beat Akhmadaliev with only, seven, eight fights that he has. But two, the money. You know, Roman hasn't made this kind of money. This is the biggest purse of his career. So, you know, he's not taking the easy fights. He wants the big money now. And I think that's...
Is this the biggest purse of his career?
I can pretty much say it is, yeah.
I don't know. I have to check on that one. Like,
check on this. But I'm pretty sure it's the biggest. I don't see him. Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
I think he made more for Dahany. That was a bigger fight.
I can pretty much guarantee he's making more for this fight. That's the only reason I can see him fighting Akhmadaliev. Why would he fight this Olympian southpaw? Another southpaw. Why would I have a southpaw phobia, Mannix. Mm-hmm. They give me the creeps, especially if they're Olympians and Akhmadaliev is both. And he's strong, and he's fast, and he's athletic, and he's cagey, and he fights compact, and he's a scary fighter. Why, if you just picked up these two beautiful belts that you worked all your life for, why won't you, take calculated risks? This is a huge risk, and I just think Akhmadaliev, I'm not a sports book, but I put him as a favorite too.
Which makes me wonder why he's taking this fight, because
money.
Well,
money. That's
hold
it.
On. Hold on. There's money in it, but there'd be equal, if not more, money in a rematch with Dahany. There'd be equal, if not more, money in several other fights. All he'd have to do to get out of this fight is basically drop one of his belts. He could drop the WBA belt. He could still keep the IBF belt. He'd still be a world champion. He could go on to fight less challenging fights with more of an upside than what he's fighting this one. This is just a big risk for... I'll have to check how much money he's actually getting off this fight, unless it's a absurd amount of money.
It's not absurd, but it's definitely the biggest purse of his career.
But it's the opening fight on a four-fight telecast. Well, like, this is a unified champion fighting the opening fight in a four-fight telecast in a fight that he's an underdog against a complete unknown. You just don't see that too
much. That's why I can pretty much guess that it's because of the money. I don't see any other reason. It's pretty crazy for me, too. I watched this man. I mean, I called this fight. I think he's very impressive. He's a pound-for-pounder, I think, and a unified champion. And if you worked all your life to get to this position, why are you going to fight a guy like Akhmadaliev? It just doesn't make sense unless you're getting paid the big bucks.
Well, I mean, it has the potential to be a great fight for sure. And if Roman loses, I wonder if he'll think back. I mean, when this fight was first made, one of the first things that came to mind was Kell Brook's decision to go back to 147 and defend his title against Errol Spence. He didn't have to do that. He was coming off a fight against Golovkin. He could have stayed and said, look, I'm going to go to 154. Yeah. I don't want to fight this young lion that not a lot of people know about. And it's just basically coming to the UK to kind of use my name to make some money and to win a belt. I think Kell Brook probably would have been better off in his career, Sergio, if he had just passed on the belt, because he broke his face again in that fight. I mean, that was a career-damaging fight for Kell Brook.
Yeah, it was. That's why matchmaking is key. You know, as a fighter, you have to pick the right fights, because one fight can damage you that much. A fighter only has a certain amount of fights in him. You know, we have mileage and I just think that was a wrong fight. I mean, Golovkin was a huge, that was just a mistake. And even Pauly Malignaggi touched on it. You know, that weights exist for a reason. That wasn't a fair fight, the Golovkin fight. Errol Spence was a fair fight, but by that time he was damaged already.
Yeah. And trying to shrink himself back down to a weight class he wasn't.
Exactly,
that
and that, anyway. That's never a good thing.
Let me finish with what we saw last weekend. Danny Garcia won, whatever. Garcia, that was kind of just a throwaway sort of fight for him. I was more interested to see what Jared Hurd looked like, you know, in his first fight since losing his titles to J-Rock Williams. He made the decision to change trainers, going away from his longtime trainer, signing on with Keiko Romo, who is a terrific trainer out of the amateur ranks, does a lot of good work with the USA Boxing folks. First, your thoughts on Hurd's performance and...
My thoughts on the trainer switch, because I dislike trainer changes, especially when it happens when a fighter first loses. That's a sign of and I hate to say this word, mental weakness by a fighter, where you have to blame somebody for your first loss in your career when it's that man, that trainer that got you to the promised land, got you the world title, got you the big money, got you in front of everything you ever dreamed of. And then the first hiccup you have of a professional, you fire the man that helped you get there. That's a flaw in character. But Hurd, I really respect him. I like him personally. I think he's great for the sport. He has charisma. But he's not a boxer. You know, the only success he had in his fight, he finally hurt him, is when he finally became who he was. And that's the pressure fighter, going inside, getting hit. But that's what makes, he's like Paul Williams. That's exactly what he is. He's, in order to be effective, in order to be aggressive and effective aggressive, is he needs to get hit. He can't be a defensive guy and stay at the end of a jab and use his advantages. It's just not his style. He's not going to be successful. He doesn't have the head movement and the footwork and the defense to do that. He's an aggressive, active volume puncher, and that's how he get the stoppages, and that's how he finally was successful in his last fight.
Well, watching that fight, it felt like a sparring session.
It was a sparring session, yeah. And it was a smaller sparring partner as well.
Yeah, like, it was a lot smaller. Santana, you know, showed heart going in there, you know, banging with him a little bit, but I couldn't figure out, is this going to be the way that Jared Hurd fights for the rest of his career? Because I don't think it's going to be all that effective. No. I agree with you. I think the way he fought, you know, the fights prior to this, whether it was Arislandy Lara, that was was that the fight of the year or one of the fights of the year in 2018?
I fought on that undercard.
What, 2018?
Yeah, that was my last fight. I fought on that undercard. The Hurd and Lara. I just needed to interject myself in my career one time in this podcast to remember.
I figured you'd just call out Manfredo.
Yes, I fought on that undercard, and that was the fight of the year. Yes, it was.
Yeah, I mean, great fight. And that's like that Hurd. I'm like, that guy's a star. Like, that guy is a potential star in the making. And seeing him fight that way, like,
he can't change his stripes. He can't change his stripes.
Well, it seems like Kei Kuroma wants him to change that.
Wants him, and he'll be able to do it for half a fight, but he's not going to do it for 12 rounds. It's not going to happen. I tweeted a Jay-Z line, and that's exactly what Jared Hurd is. You know, you do what you got, what got you there. You know, you are who you are before you got there, before you got here. So he's not going to change. He can try to adapt to a new game plan, stick to the strategy, but ultimately, character wins, and his character is aggression.
Yeah. Well,
temperament win. That's the word I'm looking for. His temperament needs to come out.
And I think, too, like, if he's faced with somebody that is at a higher level than Santana, you're going to see kind of the old Jared Hurd come back. Because, you know, it's one thing to try different things on an opponent that can't hurt you. It's another thing when there's a guy in there that's close to or equal of your talent.
Yeah, you fight down to your opponent's level, yeah. Definitely. You need that
kick. I just wonder if it screws him up, though. Like, if you're trying to change a guy in the way that Kay looks like he's trying to change him kind of in mid-career, that doesn't work all that often. Like, I'll use an example. I remember when Miguel Cotto jumped over to Emmanuel Stewart, right? That didn't work. Like, Emmanuel Stewart tried to, you know, incorporate some of his teachings into Miguel Cotto, and Miguel was already such a formed fighter that it just didn't work. They broke up after a couple of fights. Miguel went to Freddie Roach, and Freddie's like, Miguel, you're going to do what you do. I'm just going to be kind of a strategist for you, maybe tweak a couple of things. This seems like, watching Jared Hurd, it seems like we're seeing almost an attempt at a reinvention of what kind of fighter he is. And I don't know that's good for him. If he was 21 or 22, maybe, but at this stage of his career, when he's been as successful as he has, age 29, I don't see it working out if he tries to fight this way against top-level guys.
I think he's trying to extend his career. I think he's trying to save some mileage in the tank, because all his fights have been very physical, and you're not gonna last very long, even if you win fights in that physical manner. So if he can actually just be defensive for half of a fight and then fight the second half of the fight, you know, his normal physical self, that right there could save him some time and some physical strain, I guess. But no, I don't see him doing it for the entire fight and now boxing guys and being slick and using his advantages.
One thing I do like about the division is that you have the potential to have like 18 months worth of great fights. Like Jason Rosario bursting onto the scene and knocking out J-Rock Williams, and Hurd's back at 154. I don't know how long Hurd can
stay. I would love to see Rosario and Hurd because they're two huge junior middleweights.
Yeah, yeah. That was what, it was back when I wanted to see Munguia and Hurd.
Oh, that man, that would be a great fight,
Rosario and Hurd. I think they'll do a rematch with J-Rock. Maybe Hurd fights Charlo. That's a big fight. Tony Harrison getting back into the mix. I think you'll see Teixeira come over too because it's not a lot for him on the Golden Boy side of the island. He's not such a huge draw that they want to keep him there. So eventually he might join the mix. It'd be a lot of fun at 154 pounds. Before we go, is a boxing podcast, but as someone that grew up in L.A. around the same age as Kobe Bryant, I know that strongly affected you, his passing just this past week. Just give me your thoughts on, as someone that grew up in the area, what Kobe meant and how that affected you.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to eavesdrop on your interview with Riot and Ruco earlier, because I think he put it in perfect words. I mean, in words I couldn't even think of, how much he meant. And Ruco's a New Yorker. I mean, I'm from L.A., born and raised. I mean, he stayed loyal to L.A. for 20 years, which is a rarity in any sport. So it showed his loyalty. I mean, Kobe Bryant's work ethic, his mentality. I mean, a lot of Mexican Americans, Latinos. I mean, there's not that many Latinos in basketball, but we related to Kobe Bryant. We really did. We with a passion. And I was there for the Laker parades, and it was majority young Latino kids, and looking up to this star. It's just the way he carried himself is very. I mean, my brother Peter, my younger brother, he's as tough as they make them, man. And he, every time he sees Kobe and they're talking about him, you know, he tears up. And watching my brother tear up makes me tear up, and I'm about to tear up right now. So I'd just rather stop.
All right. Well said. I know it's something that's felt across sports, not just boxing, basketball, but football, everywhere. You saw, you know, mainstream news covering it. So thank you for putting that in perspective. All right. When we come back, my conversation with Demetrius Andrade. All right. Demetrius Andrade is here, middleweight champion. He's got a fight this Thursday against Luke Kuechly, defending his title as he looks to bigger fights into 2020. What's up, Demetrius?
How you doing?
So how are you feeling about this fight? I know it's not what you wanted. You wanted a bigger fight, but here you are getting ready to defend your belt against Luke Kuechly.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I'm active. I'm fighting. It's something I love to do. And climbing up the people's, you know, skin. If you like me or you don't. And if you don't know, now you know. So that's right now is the most important thing, is to get everybody to see that Demetrius Andrade is being active. He's out here. He's vocal about, you know, fighting guys and wanting to do it any which way.
When you won your title, did you think it was going to immediately open the door for bigger fights?
Yes, for sure. You know, I mean, Matchroom, Eddie Hearn, they wanted me to have two tune-up fights. Or they mentioned having a tune-up fight coming off, I don't know, 12 months, maybe less. I'm not too sure. Can't go back that far right now. But I was like, nah, I've been doing this for a long time. Billy Joe, no problem. Let's go. Let's make it happen. What's the weight? What do I need to tune up for? I either have it or I don't at this time. And I'm not, you know, going to waste any more time. I know where I am supposed to be and what I got to do to get there. So let's just go straight to the gold.
How would you describe your 2019? You defended your belt a couple of times, but you didn't get that big fight you've been chasing. How would you describe what it was?
It was good. It was a great year, actually. You know, everything we did to turn everything around to be where it's at right now was because of last year. You know, we got rid of, you know, some loose ends, made some good decisions from past decisions, and now we're here, Super Bowl weekend, punching it off.
What are some of those good decisions, those loose ends that you're talking about?
You know, just some things I can't talk about, you know, unfortunately. But just know, like, I'm here. The team is good, and everybody around me is doing everything to, you know, make better. And you know, Matchroom is doing a great job as far as, you know, moving me and putting me in the cities and the states that I need to be so people can see great, talented boxing.
You signed a 4-fight extension with Matchroom last week. Why did you decide to continue this relationship with Matchroom with Eddie Hearn?
Where else is it for me to go? As far as like that makes lucrative sense and makes sense as far as getting fights and, you know, what type of, again, you know, it's going to change my life when I step into the ring versus me going to Showtime, Top Rank. What are they going to do and how much money they going to put up for me to just fight Luke Keeler's, if that's the case? So, I mean, I think DAZN does have a great deal of interest in me being here, especially with the world title. Matchroom, of course, as well, because they don't want to, you know, lose a guy that has a belt and bring it over to the, you know, Showtime. And there's T'Challa, and then now it's just two over there. And, you know, it's not as many people over at the Showtime, in the middleweight division at Showtime, but you got the 68s that's really high up there. But, you know, right now I think the 16-68 in DAZN is still doing it because I get to, you know, still cross the international market when you talk about Billy Joe Saunders, you know, Munguia and stuff like that versus, you know, whoever else is over there.
You've been an avoided fighter for a long time, but now you not only have a world title, but you have the money behind you. You have Eddie Hearn behind you. The reward for you is worth the risk. Why do you think guys are still avoiding you?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like my last three opponents thought that. You know, they're willing to get in there. At the end of the day, I'm not fighting the most popular guy out there, but I'm fighting the hungriest guy out there. I'm fighting, you know, the guy that's in their prime, but they're not at my level, but they're in their prime. They're hungry. They're trying to make it happen, you know. And so, therefore, I'm not fighting Rocky Fielding and Lima Smith at this point right now. I'm fighting Luke Keeler. He's a tough kid, you know. He's a tough kid. He beat Luis Arias. You know, Walter was a tough kid. Arthur was a tough kid who fought Billy Joe Saunders, gave him hell. And then Selecki gave Danny Jacobs hell for 12 rounds. And, you know, look what I did in that case. But at the end of the day, those guys that I mentioned want to continue and take the chances and the risk to become a world champion. So they're going to say yes before Canelo and Triple G because, yeah, they have it. They just signed a great deal and they're trying to protect their investment, I believe. But at the end of the day, it's like how you signed for something already. You losing or fighting Demetrius Andrade will never hurt you because you can still, if you're that good and you're that type of person that has that following behind you, you're still going to be able to go and fight somebody else. Canelo lost against Floyd Mayweather. He's still doing his thing. You know, I mean, so I don't see where it's a problem. It's a win-win regardless. Win, lose, or draw. It's a win-win for everybody.
The Charlo fight. Why do you think that fight hasn't happened?
All I could do is control myself. And what I can lay on the table for what I can do being here with DAZN, you know, and doing the deals with Matchroom. Now, yeah, could I have went with Showtime, you know, but at the end of the day, making that fight to go over there and sign with Showtime for, you know, maybe a multi-fight deal just for one person didn't really make sense when that person, Charlo Brothers, however, they got their promotional company, they can come here for one fight. And then what I'm hearing is this Eddie or DAZN is still willing to give him a multi-fight deal on top of that because they are claiming their own promoter. So, I mean, the ball's in their court at this point.
So you could have gone over to Showtime to PBC.
I mean, that would be the only reason to actually go over there. That's it, is to get that fight. But I think if I want the fight. There's no reason for me to have to go over there for that fight when they, like I said, they have the opportunity and they can come over here. But that being said, if Showtime gives me that offer or gives me that type of offer, I'm allowed to go over there and go make that happen and still come back to DAZN. So where's the offer at for us to go over there?
Yeah, Eddie said you absolutely can go over to Showtime or Fox if they bring that kind of money to the table.
Yeah, so if that's what they're willing to do, then let's do it. So, you know, I'm just sitting back doing what I'm doing, you know, capitalizing on these moments here, Super Bowl weekend, getting the fans behind me and let them understand that, like, Yeah, Canelo, Triple G, but Demetrius Andrade got style.
Speaking of style, is this the kind of fighter you can look good against, Keeler? He had a good win over Luis Arias, but you are going to be on a totally different level than anybody he's used to.
I'm just going there to take one round at a time. That's it. You know, I mean, I don't know until I get in there in the ring with him to start, you know, testing and seeing what his capabilities are and what they're not and what I'm going to be looking for to hit him with some hard shots. I am looking to hit, throw some, you know, some vicious shots like I always am. And, yeah, just put on the show, man. You know, I mean, people always say, nah, you know, somebody, knockouts, cool. It's cool to get a knockout. If I get him out early, get him out early. But Chris jab in your face all night and picking somebody apart and beating them down, you know, they're going to remember that. They're going to remember that. The person, the fighter, Luke Keeler's going to remember that beating. He's going to remember like, God damn, there's nothing I could do.
Do you think there's more to gain, though, with a big knockout than beating up a guy for 12 rounds?
I mean, that guy that remembers that is always going to say Demetrius Andrade is great. He's always going to make, he's going to be like that guy. He's going to always continue to say, yeah, I fought Demetrius Andrade. He's a bad boy. Oh, yeah, he's a bad boy. Now, I got hit with a lucky shot. You know, he caught me slipping. Oh, he caught me cold. Nah, he beat me down, and he got it.
Can you look good and really be impressive in a fight that goes the distance?
Yeah, I did that plenty of times. Did it against Brian Rose. I did it against Willie Nelson. You know, that was I didn't get Vanez on it, but that was a toe-to-toe fight, me and Vanez, you know. Selecki, you know, he's a crafty guy. When you go back and watch the fight, he's a crafty guy. He was always moving. He was in a stationary target, you know.
Selecki, that was the one I thought that you could have finished him, and it would have been a big deal if you finished him. That was the one I think after that first round, a lot of people wanted a knockout.
Yeah, but, you know, he's still crafty. You know, only I know that you don't. I know if a guy is really hurt or not, versus somebody else because I'm in there. I can feel it. I can see it. You know, I can see what's going on. From the outside, it might look one way, but on the inside, you know, there's a lot of guys that got put down and got back up and I'm running after him. And then the next thing you know, I'm put down. It happened with Sergio Moore and Danny Jacobs, Andre Berto and Ortiz. It's not happening with Demetrius Andrade. So I'm going to like work the way in, master it, and if I feel like I can get him up out of there, I get him up out of there. Some guys just crafty enough and have the experience to survive.
So making 160 still good for you?
Oh yeah, I mean cheese pizzas, donuts, all from Whole Foods.
They have cheese pizzas and donuts at Whole Foods?
Yeah, vegan style. You know, definitely started building into it a lot more.
Do you feel more like a middleweight now? This is your fourth straight fight at that weight.
Yeah, but yeah, I was laid off a whole year, actually. It was my last fight, I think, was October, and I fought him in October. That was my that was a year layoff. And so, you know, I did what I can to build into it, you know, but you actually have to fight to actually really get the feel of things and take time. And I think the three fights that I had, I'm definitely starting to be a real solid 160.
When you signed the deal with Eddie, what did he tell you about what kind of fights he can get?
You know, we just put names and numbers. And if something doesn't happen, then, you know, something doesn't happen.
Do you think Charlo is avoiding you?
I can't get too much into, you know, my contract, but...
What does Eddie tell you about Charlo?
No, I haven't personally talked to him about it. You know, I mean, if it happens and it's real and the result comes to be what it's supposed to be, then I'm going to know. I mean, he has said it. He's there like 1 minute. They're like, who's Demetrius? Oh, he's not worthy. He's not worthy to fight. And then next, if I have to fight Demetrius to get a fight with this guy, or if, you know, Demetrius could be. So, I mean, they don't know what they want to do.
Do you like that fight?
Yeah, I mean, either one of them, just both of them be blockbusters to my, you know, our like engagement with each other, conflict. You know what I'm saying? Either one of them. You know, I fight both of them. Laura, you know, Laura talked a lot of shit back in the days. You know, how he beat me up and all this other stuff. You know, I mean, that's 154. Jared Hurd, he got to come up to 160 eventually. You know, so I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm here.
Well, Demetrius, I think a lot of people want to see you in big fights in 2020 to see you test yourself against the best. Good luck on Saturday, and hope you get those big fights at some point this year.
Yeah, for sure, man. And they keep letting me get active and keep fighting, man. It's just going to be more trouble for them because, man, I'm coming. It's just coming into my own a lot more every time I'm getting in the ring. So,
thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.